Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vaipada ki, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jainatai Gopremana ki. So what did we discuss? One problem that we met.
Characteristic of King Kanya. Purindana wanted to find suitable place. He went all over the world. He couldn't find suitable place. He was very morose.
Then?
And very dissatisfied, disappointed.
Then what happened?
He meets the queen.
We'll hear more about the Queen tonight. So who is this Paranjana?
Allegory.
Allegory?
This guy is a living entity.
A living entity, yeah. Yeah. And he has a friend called? What is the friend's name? No, that's who he is. That's who Narada is preaching to. But who is his friend's name?
Abhignada.
Abhi?
Abhignada.
Avijñāta. Who is the super soul? So this king, whose name is Bahinicha, he is attached to the material energy, and his sons, who are called the Prachetas, who we'll hear about at the end of this canto, they are renouncing the material energy. But their father, the great king, he is still very attached to this material world, as many of us are. So Narada mercifully appears and instructs him how to become detached from this material world. And in order to make him detached, he tells him about the allegorical personality, whose name is Paranjana. So King Paranjana, he searches all around the world, and then he finds one city which has 9 gates. And the city of the 9 gates represents our material body. And then while he's wandering through the city, then he meets a woman who's very attractive, and she represents the intelligence. And she has servants and friends who represent the mind and the senses, and unlimited followers who represent the material desires. And tonight we'll hear further about King Paranjana's attachment to this personality, to this woman. Now, the point of this allegory is that Narada is trying to make the king detached from the material energy, and that should be the result of us studying this pastime and hearing from Narada. We should become detached from the material energy. So, if you absorb your consciousness in this pastime, you'll derive great benefit from hearing this pastime. Any other points?
Why is it called avijna? Jnana means knowledge, and why is it called avijna? It's different from adhyatma.
Which verse is it in?
Well, the name of his friend.
Yeah, but which verse is that?
Verse 10.
Avijñāta. The unknown one.
Oh, Avijñāta. Unknown.
Yeah. One who is unknown. Avijñāta.
One who is unknown. So the super soul is
not seen.
So because he's not seen, he's considered Avijñāta. Any other points? So we'll continue reading. Tonight we'll go from text number 25 till 38. And we'll hear about the further description of Paranjana meeting this woman who represents the intelligence. And at the end of the class, just remind me, I have some exams marked. So if you remind me, then I'll get them back to you. If you are enthusiastic to receive them. Paranjana, the hero, became attracted by the eyebrows and smiling face of the very beautiful girl and was immediately pierced by the arrows of her lusty desires. When she smiled shyly, she looked very beautiful too, Paranjana, who, although a hero, could not refrain from addressing her. Proceed to Raja Prabhu.
Every human entity is a hero in two ways. When he is a victim of the illusory energy, he works as a great hero in the material world. As a great leader, politician, businessman, industrialist, etc. And his heroic activities contribute to the material advancement of the civilization. One can also become a hero by the master of presence is a great hero. Material activities are false heroic activities, whereas restraining the senses from material amusement is great heroism. However great the hero was made in the material world, he can be immediately conquered by the lumps of flesh and blood known as the bliss of wisdom. In the history of material activities, there are many examples like the Roman hero Antony, who became captivated by the beauty of Cleopatra. Similarly, a great hero in India named Bajirao became a victim of a woman during the time of Maharashtrian politics, and he was defeated. From history we understand that formerly politicians used to employ beautiful dresses who were trained as Vishakamis. This girl had poisons injected into their bodies from the beginning of their lives, so that in due course of time they would become so immune to the poison and so poisonous themselves that simply by kissing a person they would kill them. This poisonous girls were made to see an enemy and kill him with a kiss. Thus, there are many instances in human history of heroes who have been drugged simply by women. When part and parcel of Krishna, the living entity is suddenly a great hero, but due to his own weakness, he becomes attracted to the material creatures. Krishna Bahir Mukha Han Boga Vancha Kare Nikotas Kalk Maya Dare Japa Kriya Dare. It is said in the Prema Vivarta that when the living entity wants to enjoy material nature, it is immediately victimized by the material energy. A living entity is not forced to come into the material body, he makes his own choice. Being affected by beautiful women. Every living entity has the freedom to be affected by material nature or to stand as a hero and resist that attraction. It is simply a question of the living entities being affected or not being affected. There is no question of his being forced to come into contact with material energy. One who can keep himself standing and resist the attraction of material nature is certainly a hero and deserves to be called a ghost hound. Unless one is master of the senses, he cannot become a ghost hound. The living entity can take one of the two positions in this world. He may become a servant of his senses or he may become a master of them. By becoming a servant of the senses, one becomes a great material hero. And by becoming master of the senses, he becomes a ghost from the spiritual hero.
So what are the points in this purport?
Being a master of the senses, you are a hero, otherwise you are a hero.
Any other points?
In Telugu we have a saying, Prabhu, it's called Entati Vaadu Aina Kama Dasudu. But however big a person may be, he is a servant of the woman. It is said in respect to Alexander, they call him as a great, but after coming from the battlefield, he would bow down before a woman asking for consent.
Any other points?
Two kinds of heroes in this material world. One is the media hero and the other one is the spiritual hero. So if somebody can control his senses and not attack it to the woman of maturity, then he is a spiritual hero. And the greatest attraction is the sex of Shira Prabhupada. And that keeps us in the
Good summary. Good. Anything else?
Shrila Prabhupada gave the title of Goswami to Shrila Tamas to Krishna Maharaj when he gave up his young wife Madhuri Mataji in order to become a sannyasi.
Yeah, normally they call him Swami, but Prabhupada says because you gave something up, then you call Goswami. Yeah. Paramahamsa. Anything else?
Adi Shankaracharya in his Prakasha Govinda, he has said, Nari Sanabara Nadi Desham, Vishwa Maha Moha Desham, Etan Mamsa Vasadi Vikaram, Manasa Vichintaya Varam Varam. The woman's body is only made up of mothers and stool and blood. So think of that and just give it a Do you think of the Varam Varam?
Yeah, this is Lord Shiva instructing us. Lord Shiva is the master of the material energy. Well, that's anything else?
What is the definition of Paramahamsa?
Of what? Paramahamsa. Paramahamsa. Well, it means like a supreme swan. Devotees are like swans, so like that. Or it means the most exalted devotee. Perfect, pure devotee.
It's not a question of being attracted or not attracted, but there's a third stage, it is the higher stage of being indifferent. You don't try to avoid, nor do you try to get attracted. But being indifferent is a more higher thing.
Who said that? So, as Prabhupada explains in this purport, there are two types of heroes. One is the material hero, which this world is full of people trying to be heroes. Just like now we have World Cup. And the whole world is focused on the World Cup. So everyone is trying to be a hero, trying to be materially successful and prominent in this material world. So this is the nature of the living entity, is that Prabhupada explains, naturally the jiva is a hero. Because the pure devotee has so much shakti that he is a hero by nature. Just like it is described in the pastimes of Krishna, and when Krishna entered into the mouth of Agasura, then all of his friends entered before him. And the acharyas describe that each of Krishna's friends is so powerful, Subal, Madhumangala, Sri Dharma, Ujwala, Arjuna, Krishna has so many sakas, so many friends. Each friend is so powerful that they themselves could have killed Agasura themselves. It wasn't even necessary for Krishna to kill this demon. Because Krishna's associates are heroes. Because by the association of Krishna, you develop the qualities of Krishna. When the soul is pure, the soul has unlimited potency coming from Krishna himself. So we see that the pure devotees are full of heroic qualities. They're great heroes, even greater than the material heroes. So in the material world, people try to become heroic, but this is based on Maya. They're using their skills, they're using their ability, they're using everything which is given to them by God, by Krishna, to try to exploit the material energy. Whereas a devotee, then he is a greater hero because he tries to control his senses. As opposed to being a Godasa, he becomes a Goswami, or one who has control of the senses. This is actually heroism. A hero is one who performs a great task or tries to perform a great feat. So what is the greatest challenge in this world? The greatest challenge in this world is to control the senses. So if you can control the senses, if you actually want a challenge, then become a Goswami. That is the most heroic type of activity. To become someone who is in control of the senses. Even Hiranyakashipu, who was the greatest hero in the universe, he was the most heroic personality, the most powerful living entity in the universe. But Prahlad Maharaj says that you have not even controlled your lust. You have not controlled your senses. So you are not yet the greatest conqueror. Because still you are attached to the material world. So a devotee should become inspired. If you want to challenge yourself, then challenge yourself to become a Goswami. One who has control of the senses. Prabhupada further points out the power of Maya or the material energy. What is it that binds everyone in this material world? Right? It is the shackles of this, or the bars of this material energy, which are made of gold. And that is the attraction between the sexes. The males are attracted to women and women are attracted to men for different reasons. Men are attracted to women who are beautiful, and women are attracted to men who are rich and famous. So therefore, this is the nature of the material energy. And these golden bars, they keep us encaged in the material world. But we think it's okay. I'm in the prison, but I'm happy being in the prison because the prison has gold bars. So I will happily stay within this prison because the facility is so nice. I have women to associate, I have men to associate with. So then I'm satisfied to be here. But the fact is, you are in a prison. You are not free. You are not enjoying your full potential. A prisoner cannot enjoy his full potential. Just like we saw in the news the last few days, then that head of the David Jones company has lost his job. Right? Because he became attracted to women. Controlled by a woman, they've removed him. The head of the head CEO guy, like head of the company, lost his job. Well, they had to leave Australia. He's gone. He's so embarrassed, he's flown off to another country. So the media does not come and harass him just because he's attracted to a woman. Attracted to too many women. That's the problem. So this is Maya. This is illusion. And this is what keeps us in the material world. And we'll see in this section of the Bhagavatam, the Narada will speak in such a way to release us from this attachment to the material energy. Any points? He was born a Brahmana, but he was not a Brahmana by quality.
But he had knowledge of something. He did not practice, but he had the reason why he is called Ravana Dhamma, that he knows the knowledge, he understands it, what it is, but he did not practice.
Yeah, so he has Gyan, but not Vigyan. So he's not actually a Brahmana. Brahmana has Vigyan. His realization. Just like he was performing, he was such an expert Brahmana, he used to perform the yogyas, and all the devatas used to come to witness his yogyas because he pronounced the mantras so perfectly and he was such a poet and personality. And then Agni was sitting directly opposite to him on the other side of the yogya pit, and Agni's wife was sitting right next to him. And what is her name, the wife of Agni?
Swaha.
Swaha. Oh. She is said to be the tip of the fire. Agni is the fire, and just the tip is the most beautiful part. She is very beautiful. So Ravana, he saw that she was so beautiful. So just before he finished the yajna, he saw her and he jumped across the pit and he grabbed her and he just flew off into the air. Like that. And everyone was just amazed. You know, he's in the middle of a yajna, a holy activity. And then because he's attracted to a woman, he could not control his senses and he took her and flew off. Like that. So this is the potency of Maya. Any other points?
true when you decode the allegory, the intelligence is considered as a beautiful woman and Punjana is the soul. So why is it we can understand that Punjana is attracted to Punjana is a being is attracted to a beautiful woman? The soul attracted to the intelligence and we decode the
because Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita at the end of the third chapter, then Krishna or Prabhupada says in the purport that the intelligence is the capital of lust. So in other words, the soul becomes married to the intelligence and controlled by the intelligence, which is lusty. And because of lusty intelligence, then one falls down. I don't know about that. So it's like that. Does that make sense? Or? My dear lotus eyed, kindly explain to me where you are coming from, who you are, and whose daughter you are. You appear very chaste. What is the purpose of your coming here? What are you trying to do? Please explain all these things to me. My dear lotus eyed, who are those 11 strong bodyguards with you, and who are those 10 specific servants? Who are those women following the 10 servants? And who is the snake that is preceding you? Amogorasan.
The 10 strong servants of the mind are the 5 serving senses and the 5 knowledge gathering senses. All these 10 senses work under the aegis of the mind. The mind and the 10 senses combine to become 11 strong bodyguards. The hundreds of human under the jurisdiction of the senses are addressed here as Jalana. The mind works under the intelligence, and under the mind are the 10 senses. And under the 10 senses are innumerable desires to be fulfilled. All these, however, depend on the vital life force, which is here represented by the snake. As long as vital life force is there, the mind works. And under the mind, the senses work. And under the senses, give rise to so many material desires. Actually, the living entity, known as Puranjana, is embarrassed by so much paraphernalia. All this paraphernalia simply constitutes different sources of anxiety. But one who is surrendered up onto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and leaves all business to him is freed from such anxiety. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj advises a person who has taken to the materialistic view of life, which is never permanent but always temporary, the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and leave aside all his sober responsibilities in order to get free from all anxieties.
Any points of interest? Interesting. Prabhupada points out that the gross and subtle body, which the soul is covered by, is a source of embarrassment. Hands up if you're embarrassed about your gross and subtle body. Hands up if you're proud of your gross and subtle body. I think it's the other way. I don't think we're so much embarrassed by it. I think actually we're attached to it. We're actually proud of our gross body, our subtle body. Like that. But as long as the soul, the pure soul, is covered by the gross body and the subtle body, it's a form of embarrassment. It's like some unwanted luggage which you're carrying around with you. It's something which is unnatural and unnecessary, but it is something which covers us and is the source of our bondage in this material world. Therefore, it is embarrassing. For the soul to have a material body is an embarrassment. It means that one is fallen. It means that one is nichabada. One is away from God. Like that. So, in order to become fully purified, then one needs to engage in devotional service to Krishna and lose all of one's attachment to this gross and subtle body. Now, Prabhupada explains that if we surrender to Krishna, then we become free from all anxiety. The nature of the material world is, somehow or other, it will bring you anxiety. Even if you try to escape, it will come and find you. Just like you can go to some far distant place, but simply, anxiety will follow in the material world. That is the nature of the material world. It is difficult to escape from anxiety. Basically, it is always there. So, as it is explained in this section, then one, Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport, one needs to surrender to Krishna. Which means one needs to renounce. That is why people take to the renounced order of life. Because as long as you're in householder life, there'll be anxieties. You cannot escape anxiety in householder life. Because there's so much anxiety attached. As soon as you have material acquisition, material possessions, there will be anxiety. That is the nature. That is the nature of the material energy. So those who are intelligent, those who are Buddhas, or intelligent, who follow Buddha Yoga, as Krishna explains in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, they renounce this material world. And what is the result? They become free from anxiety. And just like Srila Prabhupada said, he said, before I started this movement, I had no disciples, I had no temples, and I had no books in mass quantity, and he said, I had no anxiety. And he said, now I have so many followers, so many temples, right, millions of books, and still I have no anxiety. This is because one is renounced from this world. But as long as one is attached or absorbed in this world, this is what Grihastha life means. You're absorbed in this world, you're attached to this world, and as long as you have all these material possessions and so forth, therefore, you will experience anxiety. So the Vedic culture teaches us to renounce. That is the point of being a devotee. We are meant to become more and more renounced as time goes by. So that we can become detached. So that at the end of our life, then we'll become free from anxiety and we can fully surrender to Krishna. The earlier you do it, the better. But as this part of the Bhagavad Gita explains, the living entity is coming to this material world to enjoy. So therefore we go through Grihastha Ashram. And we have a license for enjoyment. We can have a certain amount of material sense gratification. And then gradually we become more and more detached. Devotees should be experiencing this. You should be feeling as time passes that you're becoming more and more detached from the material energy. If your attachment is increasing, then you have to very closely look at your spiritual life and take advice from others. But devotees should feel natural detachment occurring over time. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayatyasu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayat Hoitukam. You should be feeling detached from this material energy by following the process of devotional service. Any points?
I wonder whether families truly feel anxious or anxiety because every parent blesses his child to become once again a householder. Truly speaking, if I feel it's the source of anxiety, I would be asking Abhishek to go to the married life once again. And so is the case with every parent. I don't think many parents would bless their children to take the sannyasa order straight from Brahmacharya or Brahmacharya.
Is that your experience? It's a wonderful watchful.
At least I don't advise my son or my daughter not to get married and not.
But
to
why is that? Why are you not giving them that advice? Because you're enjoying too much, or?
I can't say that I'm enjoying because I'm having so much of anxiety. But at the same time, I don't feel that anxiety is so much that I can tell my children, okay, don't get married. I only tell Abhishek that look, if you're really not. If you have control over your senses, then it's better that you take from Brahmachari to straight sannyas order. But he would say, no, daddy, no, I don't think I'm that good. I need to go.
Yeah. So that means if you're not experiencing so much anxiety, that's because of punya, you know, or because of piety in the past. You know, if devotees are not experiencing so much anxiety, then that is because of pious activities in the past. But things can change at any moment. Like that, so. That's okay. There's no problem going through grihastha life. Like
based on this, grihastha life is a source of anxiety.
Yeah, it is a source of anxiety. There's no doubt. You said it yourself. There's anxiety there.
But the anxiety is not being felt so much as to encourage the children to take a different path.
Yeah. So. It's just a different degree of anxiety, because if someone is pious, they'll experience less anxiety. If someone is impious, there'll be more anxiety from the past. Okay. And according to what Krishna desires, then he'll give you less or more also. So. Any other points?
See, the girl has to be protected. That's what the girl has to be protected before marriage by the parents and after marriage by her husband. And in all this, she should be protected by her son.
Mm.
So if the children don't get married, then how the girl is going to be protected?
Yeah, you probably don't have to worry about too many of your children not getting married. It's quite rare that people don't do that. So.
But the girl has to get married.
I don't think you'll have any problem not finding people to marry. Everyone wants to get married. It's pretty rare that someone doesn't want to get married. So. Any other points? It can be for many different reasons, because someone in the material world, a total materialist, says, I'm not feeling much anxiety. Right? And that's because when you're enjoying sense gratification, you're not feeling anxiety. Right? Just say you're eating ice cream. So you're sitting there eating ice cream, are you feeling the anxiety? Right? You're feeling, oh, the world is wonderful. Right? So if someone's enjoying sense gratification, they don't feel anxiety. And as you said, if someone's heart is indifferent, or if someone's a little bit unloving, then also they may not feel so much anxiety. And then someone can be actually spiritually advanced, so then they are detached and they don't feel anxiety. Towards who?
Towards the parents.
Yeah, well, that can be there. Like a devotee feels, you know, it's natural a devotee begins to feel detached as one advances. So, you know, we don't feel completely detached from our parents. But at the same time, if they're not devotees, then we feel, then, you know, a devotee naturally feels, how and why can I be so attached to them? Because they're not really interested in Krishna consciousness. You know, you ring them up and you speak on the phone, they just want to speak about all mundane things and like that. So therefore, naturally, you start feeling detached from them. That's Krishna's mercy. So that's just natural. A devotee will begin to feel like that. Does that answer what you're saying?
Srila Prabhupada said that we should be anxious to serve Krishna. That is the healing
that we should. That's fine. Any other points?
What is the meaning of Parasparnaya here?
Whereabouts? Where does it say that? All this paraphernalia simply constitutes different sources of anxiety. So it's paraphernalia. I mean, it's talking about the gross body and the subtle body.
Gross body.
Yeah, in this particular purport. My dear beautiful girl, you are exactly like the goddess of fortune, or the wife of Lord Shiva, or the goddess of learning, the wife of Lord Brahma. Although you must be one of them, I see that you are loitering in this forest. Indeed, you are as silent as the great sages. Is it that you are searching after your own husband? Whoever your husband may be, simply by understanding that you are so faithful to him, he will come to possess all opulences. I think you must be the goddess of fortune, but I do not see the lotus flower in your hand. Therefore, I am asking you where you have thrown that lotus. So, Paranjana is asking the girl, are you the goddess of fortune? But then he says, if you are the goddess of fortune, you should be holding the lotus flower. So is it that you are Lakshmi, that you have thrown the lotus flower away? So he is intelligent enough to understand that one should not try to enjoy Lakshmi. Because Lakshmi is, she belongs to the Lord. So anyone who is intelligent will not try to enjoy something which belongs to the Lord. So Prabhupada elaborates on this in his purport. He says that we should be intelligent. We should not allow ourselves to become attached to something which belongs to the Lord. Now, if you analyze that point, what belongs to the Lord?
Everything.
So how can you become attached to anything? You say, I'm attached to this and I'm attached to that. How can you be? Actually, what are we attached to? Everything belongs to Krishna. We say it is my this, my that, my that, my that. My husband, my wife, my children, like that. Everything belongs to Krishna. What are you attached to? So this is the nature of the material energy. That we become attached to things which are false. That is called maya, that which is not. So Prabhupada is explaining here, and Narada is explaining, that we should not allow ourselves to become attached to something which does not belong to us. Because it does not belong to us. So how can you become attached to it? Simply you are stena. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, stena means you are a thief. You're saying it belongs to me, but actually you're just a thief. The Ishavasya principle is that you may use whatever Krishna gives to you as your quota in his service. But that is all. Otherwise everything else belongs to him. You cannot keep more than what belongs to you. And I see that in my own life as a grihastha. Sometimes material acquisition begins to become more than what is necessary. And as soon as that happens, then Krishna takes it away. Because otherwise we start to become more attached. You know, material acquisition becomes more, and then we think, oh, no. I need this. Grihasthas always think like this. Oh, I need this, I need this, I need like that. But as soon as that happens, at least for me, then Krishna, he takes that away. So we don't become too attached to the material energy. Krishna says you can just have what is yours, what I give to you, that much, but not more than that. Otherwise you'll become. So it's better that we become detached ourselves. If not, then Krishna will make that arrangement. But what is ours anyway? Any points?
Very difficult to understand in fact. Theoretically I can say that while it is so easy, while you saw some illum drama, but when it comes into practice, it's not that easy.
Yeah, so it means you have to begin to read this pastime very seriously. You should read it many times. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hear the Bhagavatam in Puri from Gadadhar Pandit, who is Radharani herself. And it says that he would hear the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj hundreds of times. So you should hear this pastime again and again and again. You should read more. Huh? Why do you all just rely on me? Hands up if you read the purports before you came to class today. One good student. Not that. But the rest of you just rely on me to read them, and then you just come and you make your notes and hope you pass the exam. But I'm giving the exams back tonight, and you'll see that you didn't do so well. Which means that you should be reading outside of class also. Don't just rely on me. You should be reading this pastime again and again and again and again. And if you say I have no time, then Prabhupada says, eat less and sleep less. You won't give up your eating and sleeping. You'll give up reading the Bhagavatam, but you won't give up your eating and sleeping. Tomorrow is Nirjala Kadashi. What is your excuse? So you have to develop good habits. Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishnamurti, he said, it requires practice. Right? Reducing your eating and sleeping requires practice. Do you think Prabhupada just immediately rose to this platform and was sleeping 2 hours a day? Right? It requires practice. Even Prabhupada reduced and reduced and reduced like that. So you have to develop this seriousness in your Krishna consciousness. Reduce your material situation. Okay. O greatly fortunate one, it appears that you are none of the women I have mentioned because I see that your feet are touching the ground. But if you are some woman of this planet, you can, like the goddess of fortune, who accompanied by Lord Vishnu, increases the beauty of the Vaikuntha planets. Also increase the beauty of this city by associating with me. You should understand that I am a great hero and a very powerful king on this planet. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that everyone in this material world has Purusha Bhav. Right? You think you are so good. We all think we are so good. We act like we're all humble. We do all this humble... we have this pretension of humility and we act like we're humble, but actually we all think we're so good. I mean, you should hear some of the things that my mind says flattering me. Oh, I'm so good, I'm so good, I do so many good things. So this is all material. This is Purusha Bhav. You are thinking you are something very wonderful, but that is your illusion. You think you're special. You think you're significant. Now, even as a devotee, you think you're significant. Your material consciousness comes into your devotional service. Oh, I'm a bhakti vriksha leader. I'm such a big bhakti vriksha leader. I have so much. I'm such a big preacher. So many people listen to me. You have all of this going on in your mind. But this is just Purusha Bhav. Devotees do not think like that. Real devotees do not think like that. Right? You're just a pretentious devotee. You're just a pretender. You think you're very exalted. You even think that you're very attracted to Vrindavan and Radha and Krishna's pastimes. But Radha and Krishna don't think like that. The Brijbasis don't think like that. They don't have this Purusha Bhav. You have this Purusha Bhav. That is your problem. You think you're something very significant and wonderful. But this is not advanced devotional service. So, whether you're male or female, you have to give up this enjoying propensity. Whether in the male body, it's not the men are just Purush, the females have the same desire to enjoy. It is Purush above, it is material consciousness. Any points?
To an extent, I find devotees try to extol others and, oh, you are such a wonderful devotee, you are such an exalted person. Let me take something from your plate, and then forcefully they do that. So I don't know how far they are trying to promote the push up of another person, another devotee.
So what is the point?
Extending your point that some of them, they may feel that, well, I'm a great preacher, I'm a great devotee. Inadvertently, I'm going to other devotees also promote that sort of an attitude in the other devotees, in the devotees, by saying that you are such an exalted person, you are such an exalted devotee. Please let me touch your feet, please let me take your dust. So these sort of statements make the other person, though maybe very humble, but still make them feel, oh, for it, temporarily they're put on a higher platform.
Yeah, it's the nature of devotees to want to get the remnants of other devotees. Is the nature of devotees to want to take the dust at the feet of other devotees? Is the nature of devotees to want to take the water which is washed at the feet of the other devotees? That is okay from that devotee's side. But from our side, we should not want the devotees to do these things. That should be the point. Those devotees may want to do it, but we should not want to let devotees do that to us. That's the point. Okay. Certainly your glancing upon me today has very much agitated my mind. Your smile, which is full of shyness, but at the same time lusty, is agitating the most powerful Cupid within me. Therefore, O most beautiful one, I ask you to be merciful upon me. So, Prabhupada said, public enemy number one is?
Lust.
What sort of lust? Prabhupada said, Mr. Lust. Public enemy number one. It is not Osama bin Laden. It is not George Bush. It is Mr. Lust. This is the problem in the material world. Kama Esha, Krota Esha, Rajaguno, Samudbhava. It is lust alone, Arjuna, which is the all-powerful, all-conquering, most formidable enemy of the soul in this material world. Lust means the desire to enjoy your senses separately from Krishna. Atmendriya Priti. This is calm, this is lust. As opposed to Krishnendriya Priti. As opposed to giving the senses of Krishna pleasure. When we want to give our senses pleasure. Just like when we take prasadam. Prabhupada said we should honor prasad, not take prasad or enjoy prasad, but honor it. As opposed, because even prasadam is pure, but then you become just a sense enjoyer. You're simply just eating for your own enjoyment. That is not actually the consciousness. The consciousness you should be remembering Krishna. Just like when Prabhupada would take prasad, then he would remember Krishna. This has been tasted by Krishna. This food has been offered to Krishna. That is the correct consciousness. Any points here?
When there is people say that the food is not very tasty, like even if it's fresh out of the pot, sometimes the food is not tasty, they are not like to
taste
it.
No, but anything that you accept on your plate, then you have to take it. If you leave anything on your plate, then as much as you leave on your plate, you waste, then that much you will be starved of in your next life. It's an offense to Krishna's prasada to leave anything on the plate. Even you see the devotees when they finish, like there's like 10 grains of rice on the plate. Even that's wrong. No, that all of that is Krishna prasad. So it must be honored like that. So do not take more on your plate than what you can take. So the Vedic system is you put some on the plate, the devotee takes prasad. When they're finished, then you give more. Not that you just put too much. And then the devotee cannot finish or as it is like that. That is not the system. The system is when you serve, just like this thing, you know, when you go to Indian people's places, right? Anyone here from India? So you're going to, and some, even all the devotees, and you go to the house, and everyone puts like, on, you know, puts one spoon and say enough, and then they put another spoon on. But you just said enough, and then they put another spoon on. And then they end up, and then you feel like you've eaten too much, or you can't finish it properly. It's actually, it's not culture. I don't know what it is. It's something which is coming from India. I know what the heart intent is. The heart is to give more, to be like that. But it comes like, it's actually a lower level of culture. Because I've been to some devotees' houses who are very cultured devotees, and they serve exactly what you want. That's actually first class. There's actually this second class thing, where you go and they put on the plate, and then they just put another one like that. You didn't ask for the second one. I remember Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj, one time he was taking prasad and one of the devotees was serving and he was putting more on the plate. Maharaj says, I can't eat it. Why are you putting it there? I can't eat it. Like, I'm already full. I can't eat it. Why are you? And then you put it...
They want to feed the Vaishnava.
Yeah, so Prabhupada said, are you serving me? Or what did Prabhupada say? I don't know. One time in Los Angeles, someone was cooking Prabhupada's lunch and Prabhupada walked past the kitchen. Prabhupada said, what are you cooking? And so Prabhupada were cooking this. And Prabhupada said, are you cooking for me or cooking for you? Because I just want rice, dal, chapati, sabji. And they were making pakora, chutney, all these things. Prabhupada, are you cooking for me or cooking for you? So this is, you have to understand what is actually culture and what is actually the proper consciousness. So when we serve prasad, we should give what the devotee wants. Then you give prasad and then they take, and if they want more, then you give more. Not that you're just giving too much of that, it's actually not culture. Any points here? What's that? Yeah, I wish they would learn it, because I keep going to everyone's house to take prasad and everyone keeps doing it, and I have to, every time I have to say it like that. You don't do it, you don't have to worry about it, but so many devotees do it like that, and I have to keep pointing it out every time I go. I have to say the same thing. It's not actually the highest part. And then the other point is sometimes, like, you know, breakfast in the temple and they make the plate up for someone, and devotee, I hear it all the time, the devotee comes and says, I can't eat that much. So what is this? Like, if the person's not sitting there, don't make the plate. Or if the devotee asks you to make a plate and save them, then give them a human amount, give them something they can actually finish. You know, so many times, like, I couldn't make it to the temple, and then I rang someone and said, can you bring the prasad back for me? And then they brought it back and they bring back like this. And you see it and you think, like, who are you feeding? Like, it must be some elephant who's living here in Albert Park. Because I can't, I mean, I eat a lot, but I can't eat as much as they give sometimes.
So.
First class. You should see, if you ever see Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj, His Holiness, if you ever see him take prasad, and he finishes, and there is nothing on the plate. Nothing. Like, nothing. Usually they eat off the leaf plates, like in Mayapur, and you see there's nothing, like, not even grain, not even a, you know, like the sabji, there's some juice from the sabji or something. Nothing. He just keeps going. Right, until there's nothing left. That plate is clean. And then he rolls the plate up. Like, he does it. You see him. He has this pattern of how he rolls the plate and then folds it. And then he goes and he... like that. Yeah. If you want to learn culture, then you have to... So, like, if you were serving your Guru Maharaj, how would you serve? Right, you serve him and then he says, okay, enough. And then you put another... Would you put another spoon? Would you do it? So then why do you do it to everyone else? Why is it different? Right. Are we people or... Why, you know? When you get to the spiritual world, you can do what you want. In the spiritual world, they can eat as much as they want. But in the spiritual world, they still serve properly. My dear girl, your face is so beautiful, with your nice eyebrows and eyes, and with your bluish hair scattered about. In addition, very sweet sounds are coming from your mouth. Nonetheless, you are so covered with shyness that you do not see me face to face. I therefore request you, my dear girl, to smile and kindly raise your head to see me. Narada continued, my dear king, when Puranjana became so attracted and impatient to touch the girl and enjoy her, the girl also became attracted by his words and accepted his request by smiling. By this time, she was certainly attracted by the king. Murli Prabhu, can you read that?
By this incident, we understand that when a man is aggressive and begins to move a man to win, this process is described in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, verse 8, and Pum's spear, Maitri Bhava, Kita. This attraction is enacted on the platform of sexual life. Thus, the sex impulse is a platform of material engagement. This conditional life, the platform of material sense engagement, is a cause of forgetfulness of spiritual life. In this way, helping it seek original Krishna consciousness becomes covered or converted into material consciousness. Thus, one engages in the business of sense gratification.
So, the energy which binds everyone in this material world is called Maituni Bhav. Maituni Bhav means sex attraction. This is what binds everyone in the material world. The attraction between the man and the woman. Just like they did the survey many years ago, they said, what is it that the men want most in the women? 8 out of 10 men said, it doesn't matter if she is unintelligent or if she is poor or what she is, as long as she is beautiful. Then that is what we want. And then they interviewed the women, and 9 out of 10 women said, it doesn't matter if he is unintelligent or if he is ugly for what he is, as long as he has money, then this is what we want. This is Maituni Bhav. Right? The men are attracted to the women for sense gratification. The women are attracted to the men for material facility. This is Maituni Bhav. And this is what covers our Krishna consciousness. And that's why there's so many people, you preach to them, but they cannot take it up. Right? Because their consciousness is covered by this Maituni Bhava, the attraction between the senses. And this is what binds us in this material world. And it keeps us here lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And people say, I don't mind coming back. I'm happy to come back. As long as I can have her, as long as I can have him, I will come back. So it is a jail with golden bars. That is the nature of this material world. Very difficult to transcend this material energy. One has to become very serious in his attraction to Radha and Krishna, if one wants to transcend this material world. Any points? The girl said, O best of human beings, I do not know who has begotten me. I cannot speak to you perfectly about this, nor do I know the names or the origin of the associates with me. So Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport that this is the condition in the material world that we have forgotten Krishna. Basically, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, the basic principle of the material world is avidya. Rupa Goswami explains this in the Nectar Devotion. Basically, all of us are covered by ignorance. Now, because we are covered by ignorance, we have forgotten who we are. People do not know who they are. Prabhupada explains in this section in the purports, people do not even believe there is anything after this life. Just like I was speaking to my uncle, and I was saying to him, so what do you think will happen when we die, when you pass away? He said, well, I would like to believe there is something, but honestly, I don't think there is. And the richest man in Australia, his name was Kerry Packer, he had a heart attack, and he was clinically dead for 3 or 4 minutes, and they brought him back to life, and then he died again later on. But he said, I went to the other side, I died for 3 or 4 minutes, he was dead, the heart stopped beating, and then they brought him back to life. And he said, I can tell you there is nothing there. After death, there is nothing. He actually believed that. And he was preaching like that. So people think there is actually nothing. Many people think like this. So this is the nature of avidya, or the covering of the material energy, that people forget who they are. They don't understand that there is even a soul. And people who do understand the soul, but what is the nature of that soul? Just like on Saturday night, myself and Veda Priya, we went to visit some people who we are cultivating near the farm, but they're in a different yoga group. And their guru, who is coming from India, it's interesting because the guru's guru actually comes from Varshana, which is where Radharani comes from. But they're Mayavadis. And then they were preaching their philosophy to me, but they were saying, actually, I couldn't even understand what they were saying. They were saying something like, we're all part of all the gods. I couldn't even make sense of what they were saying. But something like, all the gods are there, and then we are part of that, or something, and like that. But basically, it's just confusion. It's avidya. It's ignorance of who we are and what we are. Because it is very simple who we are. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Jivera Swarupa Hoy Krishnera Nichadas. Krishnera Tatashta Shakti, Veda, Veda, Prakash. All of us are eternally the servants of Krishna, Nichadas. It is very simple. Like that. But most people do not understand this at all. Prabhupada said, I've come to teach you that which you have forgotten. That is the point of this Krishna consciousness movement. We have to teach people who they are. And that's why Prabhupada, you see all his lectures, he travelled for 12 years all around the world. What did he lecture on? You are not the body, you are the soul. Because if you don't understand this basic point, we don't understand this point, then you cannot understand spiritual life. This is where spiritual life begins, with Atma Tattva. Any points here? A great hero, we only know that we are existing in this place. We do not know what will come after. Indeed, we are so foolish that we do not care to understand who has created this beautiful place for our residence. My dear gentlemen, all these men and women with me are known as my friends, and the snake, who always remains awake, protects this city even during my sleeping hours. So much I know. I do not know anything beyond this. Who is the snake? The living force. The prana. As long as you do not have living force, then what happens? Well, you should know this. This will be on your next exam. What happens when you don't have the living force? Then you're dead. You go to the next body. Like that. So the living force is that snake which protects us. It's an allegory like that, saying like the snake. There's a snake that's always protecting us. So basically we're kept alive. As long as we have life, then we can serve Krishna. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, says, if you have life, you can preach. What is the qualification to become a preacher? You have to be alive. Hands up if you're alive. Dhruv? Dhruv? Hands up if you are alive. He does understand. What that? If you are alive, then you can preach. That is the only qualification. So as long as you're alive, then you've been given permission to preach by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yari Deketari Kaha Krishna Upadesh. So this is the purpose of life. If you have life, if you have energy and you don't preach, then you're a dead person. You're just a flapping dead body, as Prabhupada would explain it.
Is the ghost in the life sense?
Ghost? Yeah, there's prana there, because Prabhupada says the prana accompanies the soul as it changes each body. And so if they're moving around, that means the prana is in the subtle body. Like that. So yeah, they have the prana. Like that.
But isn't it vital for the vital
control? Yeah, Prabhupada explains earlier on that is what the prana is carried by the air. Your life force is carried in the airs of the body.
Yes.
By that, so.
So the ghosts have
got those vital air? Ghosts have a subtle body, so I don't know if it's more subtle than the air or. I'm not sure. Where are we up to? 30?
35.
Or the 36? We did 36. Oh, we're up to 36. I jumped over. What is your question?
Can we kill a ghost, bro?
No, you can't kill it.
Why, bro?
I don't know why. You can't kill it. You can make them go away. But I don't think you can kill it. But you can make it go away. There's one devotee in used to be in Mayapur named Chitteshwara. He catches them. Catches them and he puts them in the jar. You even see there's some video where he catches the ghost, he puts them in the jar. Yeah, when the people are possessed, people get a bit like that. They got the ghost and then he captures them and he puts them in the jar. I don't know what he does after that. He does something with them. He just, I don't know what he does.
Can
it kill you? Yeah, they can kill people. Actually, in Mayapur, like in the Lotus building, the Conch building, like that, Prabhupada said, do not sit, sometimes devotees sit on the rails, there's a big drop over the other side. Prabhupada said, do not sit like that, because the ghost may. They can kill you if they want. They do all sorts of things. Okay. So we're on 36?
Yeah.
O killer of the enemy, you have somehow or other come here. This is certainly great fortune for me. I wish all auspicious things for you. You have a great desire to satisfy your senses, and all my friends and I shall try our best in all respects to fulfill your desires. So, as we said previously, the capital tool of lust is? The intelligence. So the intelligence is saying here, just like the beautiful woman says to the man, I will take care of you. I will satisfy everything for you. I will give you everything. I will satisfy all your desires. That's what every person wants. Someone who will just satisfy all of their desires. So the intelligence, which is lusty, if the intelligence has lust in it, then the intelligence is telling us like that. Stay with me and I will satisfy all of your desires. Everything you want. I'm here to serve you. So Prabhupada says, he quotes, Vyavasi yapmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana bahushaka kinantascha. So bahushaka, one whose intelligence is not fixed, is many branched. The intelligence will go in every direction. Like that. But for a devotee, the test of the devotee, as Prabhupada said in the beginning, you must become a Goswami. You must become ekeha, only fixed on pleasing Guru and Krishna. Vaishnavas, Guru, Krishna. Hari Guru, Vaishnava, Bhagavata, Gita. You must become fixed on serving the Guru, the Vaishnavas, and Krishna. Then you can overcome this lust. Otherwise, it is not possible to conquer lust. Narottam Das Thakur teaches us that use that desire, that strong desire, channel that to become to develop strong desire to please Krishna. Otherwise, that lust, that propensity, will take you away from Krishna. But use that desire to become strong. So what does it mean to have strong desire? It means that you must take responsibility in devotional service. That's how you have strong desire. That's why Prabhupada said one time, He said that you should go to the place where they're selling Krishna anxiety and you should buy as much as you can. So it means you have to take responsibility for spreading the Sankirtan movement. In this way, you won't have time to think of your material desires because you'll be so absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said we should be so busy in serving Krishna that when we go to bed at night, as soon as we put our head on the pillow, we fall asleep. Immediately. Like that. Because we're just so exhausted. Because we've given all of our energy for serving Krishna. Okay. My dear Lord, I have just arranged this city of 9 gates for you so that you can have all kinds of sense gratification. You may live here for 100 years and everything for your sense gratification will be supplied. Here's a nice purport. Jagannath Ram Prabhu, you want to read that?
The wife is the cause of all kinds of success in religion, economic development, sense gratification and ultimately salvation. When one accepts a wife, it is to be understood that he is being helped in his progressive march towards liberation. In the beginning of life, a person is trained as a brahmachari and is then allowed to marry a suitable girl and become a householder. If one is thoroughly trained in household life, he finds all facilities for human life, eating, sleeping, mating and becoming. Everything is there, it is executed according to regulated principles.
So this is the purpose of the Bhagavatam's teaching is this is the duty of the wife. The wife is there to satisfy the family. In Dharma, in Artha, in Karma and Moksha. The wife is the impetus for all of these things. In the beginning, she should be the impetus for Dharma, following the principles of religion. She should assist in following the principles of religion. In Artha, she is the principle for Artha. If you don't have a wife, there's no need to develop economically. She fulfills sense gratification in the Grihastha Ashram. She supplies, she makes the house a pleasant place to be. And she satisfies the senses. Like that. And then ultimately, she helps us become liberated. And ultimately, she helps us become Krishna conscious. Because she inspires us as a devotee. Now, there's the duty of the wife, to inspire the husband to become a devotee. The duty of the wife is not to nag the husband. Because I don't have this and I don't have that and you didn't do this and why do you always do like that? And that's not the duty of the wife. Now the duty of the wife is to inspire the husband. The duty of the husband is to set an example to enthuse the wife and the children. That is the duty. And the final verse for tonight. How can I expect to unite with others who are neither conversant about sex nor capable of knowing how to enjoy life while living or after death? Such foolish persons are like animals because they do not know the process of sense enjoyment in this life and after death. So the materialist thinks that the whole purpose of life, Krishna says 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the demons think the whole purpose of life is sex. Right? But for the devotee, it is completely the opposite. For the devotee, the whole purpose of life is to become fully Krishna conscious. So a devotee renounces sex life. The materialistic persons want to have more sex life, the devotee wants to have less sex life. Just like when Prabhupada began the movement, he was explaining to the early devotees that the grihasthas can only have sex once a month to procreate a child. And then Hayagriva Prabhu, he's one of Prabhupada's first disciples, he said, then we might as well just give it up. And Prabhupada said, that is the whole idea. Why do you think you can only have once a month? Right? So you become detached. So then you do not want to have any more. That should be the goal. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.
Okay. So